847-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday at 9 o'clock. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And we'll get him at some point in time.
Well, no, I'm here.
You're here?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Sandy, how you doing, man?
I don't know yet.
Did you see the size of that guy?
Gilbert.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I was real careful. I was super polite.
As a guy who coached football, and you played football a little bit, and you look across that guy, he's half the size he said he was at his playing weight.
Yeah, he would have toyed with me.
Not only you.
Wouldn't even have noticed me, actually.
Yeah. He's pretty massive guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing to me, a guy. And you said he used to be a track star.
Well, I knew he ran track. He said that he ran track. Yeah, and I remember the refrigerator Perry, who was
big. A refrigerator.
Refrigerator, but he also ran track. You know, these guys were, you know, they're big but athletic and fast.
Yeah. But anyway, Sandy, a lot to talk about.
Grizzly bears are fast too.
Yeah. Come on, man. Sandy, a lot of stuff going on. Let's talk about the bank collapses, Silicon Valley, but not only Silicon Valley, but in some other parts of the nation, of the world.
Well, two other banks in the country, Silvergate and Signature Bank. In the last couple of weeks, Signature Bank just over the weekend, Silvergate a little while ago, and then Silicon Valley. And Silvergate and Signature Bank were both cryptocurrency fatalities, and Silicon Valley was a bank in California that basically centered around lending to and doing the banking for startup high tech businesses.
Let me ask you, because I was reading something the other day. How did people with all this money get caught up in crypto? You know, Shaq apparently with all that money he has, $400 million, whatever it is, he got caught up in the crypto kind of thing. What was that about?
Well, it seemed magic. You know, back in the day in Holland, they had a tulip run where people were investing in tulips because you can make a lot of money. And cryptocurrency, there were plenty of people, even savvy people, who thought that cryptocurrency was a sound investment that should be a part of everyone's investment portfolio. Personally, I agreed with Warren Buffett, who said that cryptocurrency was the equivalent of cow dung. And anybody would trade cow dung too if you could make money in it for a while. But, you know, cryptocurrency I've talked about it on the radio before. I mean, the problem is it's not a reliable value for currency, and so it can't really be a currency. And so it's got to be something else, and it became really just something you could speculate in.
Yeah, but the only reason we're talking about it now is it kind of played a role in.
Well, the failure of Bankman-Fried, his business FTX, the failure of that exchange, exposed cryptocurrency as being something that wasn't as sound as people thought it was. It wasn't as mainstream an investment as people were beginning to think it might be, and there was a flight from cryptocurrency, so that the value of that was only as much as somebody would pay for it. And more people were frightened to buy it, and fewer people wanted to pay much for it. So the value of cryptocurrency fell to a fraction of what it had been, and that took down a lot of people whose financial well-being was based on the value of cryptocurrency, and there was a real outmigration from that FTX exchange. Sam Bankman-Fried had created something kind of that blossomed overnight, fell apart in the morning.
So let's talk about Silicon Valley Bank and why this should be a big deal to the average person, because these folk in Silicon Valley were making the money they've been making over the last decade or so was just unbelievable money.
Well, but the Silicon Valley Bank was first of all, it was banking startups. So it was banking people before they made all their money, and then a bunch of people who made a lot of money who felt loyal to that bank that had helped them start out. So they stuck with it when their businesses got bigger and stronger. And that's how Silicon Valley became one of the top 20 banks in the country. But what we have to do is look at how banks work. And so, you know, banks have deposits. And let's say you've got a bank that has $1 billion of deposits, but they turn around and they lend out or otherwise invest 800 million of that billion. Now they've only got 200 million left. And if a bunch of people show up and want their money back, because what's happening with Silicon Valley Bank was the whole startup industry out there was having trouble finding new investors. And so when they didn't have new investors, they had to draw down their bank balances to finance themselves. So they began to take money out of Silicon Bank. But Silicon Bank didn't have anywhere near the amount of money as the total deposits. So a bank is required to have two things. They have to have reserves. They can't lend out everything, but they can lend out a lot of it. And then they have to have capital behind that. That's what the owners of the bank have put into the bank. So you could expect a bank like Silicon Bank, if they had $1 billion, they had much more than that, but if they had $1 billion of assets, you could expect them to have at least $50 million of equity in the bank. And probably they have $100 million. And so when there starts to be a bit of a run on the bank has to sell off some of that capital. They've got that capital, and it's invested in something because they don't want it to just sit there as cash. And so what the banks have been doing is they put it in treasuries. They had it in 4- and 5-year treasuries, safe investment. But the treasuries were giving like 0.5% interest or 1% interest when they bought it. When interest rates went up to 5%, the value of those bonds fell in half. So they had a $1,000 bond, suddenly it was worth $500. And if they had to sell it when it was worth $500, they lost a lot of the capital. So what was happening at the bank in California was when they sold off their capital, they had to realize a whole bunch of losses. They had to announce that to the public. They had to tell
which created a panic.
Well, they had to tell the public that their capital was no longer adequate. It was no longer 5%. They were going to have to go out and raise more capital. And then all of a sudden, in the Silicon Valley Bank had a whole bunch of startups in it. Those startups, many of them were owned by venture capital firms. So let's say that there are 20 venture capital firms that owned 70% of the startups that were in the Silicon Valley Bank. Those venture capital firms said, get your money out of the bank, because we think that bank might fail. And so it wasn't just some of the depositors who went to take their money out, but almost all of them.
So let me ask you, Sandy. So the venture capitalists who take these risks have to be bailed out, some of them.
No. The venture capitalists own the companies that were the startup companies.
Okay.
They have stock in those startup companies. They're overseeing those startup companies, and they want to make sure those startup companies don't fail because, for instance, that their bank deposits evaporate. So they're watching over those companies, and then they also hear through the grapevine in California that Silicon Valley Bank has just said that they need to raise new capital because their capital is impaired because of this problem with the interest rate reduction on treasuries and the loss of value of treasuries. Also, coincidentally, the CEO of that bank had a pre-planned sale of his stock. But the pre-planned sale of the stock came coincident with the announcement by the bank that their capital was low. So now everyone thinks, oh my God, that's a sure sign this bank is going to fail. And so the the venture capital firms all told their little investment, the companies they were invested in, get your money out of the bank.
So let me ask you, Sandy, is it the FDIC?
Yes.
It can only guarantee $250,000.
Well, the FDIC is like a mutual insurance company that is owned essentially by all the banks.
Right.
And all the banks get taxed and pay premiums, like insurance premiums, to FDIC. In exchange for that, they can tell their customers, you've got $250,000 can be deposited in my bank, and it's absolutely safe because it's guaranteed. And so the banks appreciate the FDIC because it makes banking a lot safer. But what's happened this weekend was that the government decided that the FDIC would not only cover up to $250,000.
But over and above.
But it's going to cover all of the deposits of these banks so that there isn't a fear that spreads across the country.
And there's a run on banks everywhere.
Yeah, run on banks everywhere for the deposits, not the ones that are up to $250,000. It's those much bigger deposits.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve, which then, I guess, not the federal government, but the Federal Reserve, is the entity that can then step in. They have the resources financially.
Well, the FDIC is what steps into the banks. So what happens under the FDIC insurance plan is that when a bank is failing, the FDIC shows up in the morning and says, we're taking
Sandy,
over.
Sandy, hold the thought. Because this is involved for most of us who could never even imagine what it's like.
Well, it's important that we all understand it and we get a sense of comfort about it.
That's why we want to make sure.
Yeah.
844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Because give me the night. Cause there's music in the air and lots of love and everywhere. So give me the night. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday, and that means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, we were talking off the air, and for people who may say, well, this Silicon Valley problem with a couple banks, several banks, that doesn't impact or affect me. Why are we so concerned about that? You know, that's only for rich people. You say what to that?
Well, banks aren't only for rich people, and there are plenty of small. You know, if you have a deposit of less than $250,000, you don't have to worry about your money in the bank. But the financial system is different, okay? And if the financial system of this country were to collapse, then you end up with a very deep recession. I mean, that was the reason for the 2008 recession, was the financial system fell apart, you know, and in 1932, there was a run on banks in this country. That was before FDIC existed. It was the reason FDIC was created, this Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. But that run on the bank created the very bottom of the Depression. That was the bottom, the worst time in the history of America's economy, total collapse. And so it's important that our banks work. I mean, banks are are not just for rich people. Banks are the place that our money gets processed. And so I think what was done this weekend by the FDIC was really quite ingenious and smart. And it's not, people should understand, this isn't tax revenue that's being used to save a bank, number one. Number two, the banks aren't being saved. Silicon Valley Bank is going to go under, and the shareholders of Silicon Valley Bank are going to lose their money. The people who own that bank are going to lose their money. Signature Bank in New York that was taken down this weekend, the owners of that bank are essentially going to lose their money, but the people who have their money deposited in the bank are safe. So the safety of money deposited in banks is the ultimate source of comfort to the economy. And so I think what's happened here is that it's very ingenious. The FDIC is not government money, it's bank money. In order to be a bank in this country, you need to be a member of the FDIC and have your deposits insured. In order to have your deposits insured, you have to pay the premiums that are charged to you by the FDIC as a bank. And so what's going to happen here is if the FDIC reserves get too small as the result of these payouts, they're going to levy more on the banks. And so the banks' premiums will go up until the reserves are adequate. And maybe the FDIC is going to have to reformulate how it describes its promise to the public. And maybe the promise to the public will include higher deposit numbers in the future.
So I guess, Sandy, I guess as a novice in this, what I would ask is, 2008 was just yesterday, and people lost their homes and everything
right
in that financial collapse. I would have thought that there were mechanisms put in place to prevent that ever happening again, but based on some of the stuff I've read about this, this could lead, if it's not handled properly, to another collapse.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is the financial system is a relatively fragile organism. And we find that out periodically. We found it out during the period of runaway inflation in the 70s. We found it out in 2008 when there was a calamitous event. We found it out in 1932. We found it out at various times that we have to be careful with this mechanism, that it's complicated and complex and somewhat fragile. And I think that what the Fed did this weekend was remarkable, in that I think it's going to be able to staunch this fear quite quickly. And the real problem is if large depositors in banks, and we should understand that for instance the bank in California, fewer than 10% of those deposits were less than $250,000, because it was a bank for business people, and the businesses were required and held much higher balances of deposits there. And the same is true for every sizable bank in this country. The banks are filled with deposits from large corporations that have many dollars involved with it. And, you know, those people watch their money carefully. And, you know, to the extent they thought it was at risk, they'd pull it out of the bank.
So part of this is, and what is being said is because of the unstable climate with inflation, that had some bearing or some reason or rationale for why these banks.
Well, the commonality between all the bank failures related to the fact that the treasury bonds that they were holding in their capital account had, because of rising interest rates, the value of the bonds went down. Because if the bond is paying 1% and the prevailing interest rate is 5%, that $1,000 bond was worth $1,000 when the prevailing interest rate was 1%, but it's worth $650 or $700 when the prevailing interest rate is 5%.
Pretty significant.
Which is a big loss. And so if those banks, those capital accounts, are forced to sell the bonds and realize the loss, then suddenly their capital is what's called impaired. They don't have as much capital as they need to have to be able to declare their safety to the public, because the first fallback when a depositor comes to get his money out, the first fallback is the cash reserves the bank doesn't lend out of the deposits. The next protection level is capital.
So you got to hold that thought. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. We'll be right back. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, we were talking, Sandy, about the banking industry in Silicon Valley. And for those of us who we've always heard about Silicon Valley, right? And all this money and people getting wealthy and rich, Silicon Valley. And now all of a sudden there's some stuff happening in Silicon Valley that's making it precarious. Is it safe to say that all of that money that people had made over the years, technology and all those things right now is kind of being challenged? No,
not really. I mean, I think this, one of the reasons I think it happened there was that the depositors were owned by a small, Silicon Valley's more like a smaller community. The information was spread very quickly in Silicon Valley. The people who have their money deposited there were all people who spend all their time on the internet and reading. And so they all were getting the information very quickly about what might be happening at the place where they banked. Furthermore, you know, I don't know what the number of venture capital firms are, but there probably are 25 or 30 of them that own a substantial number of startup companies, and they were calling the shots to those. You know, maybe they own 300 startup companies who were major depositors in the bank. They told them to get their money out of the bank because they were worried it was going to collapse. So it was like sort of a tight community with lots of, on top of the information that caused this to happen quite quickly there. But, you know, the other bank failures, Signature, the other two were more related to the cryptocurrency problem and were a fallout from that. And then the Republic Bank, which is currently being talked about as being potentially at risk, is just a bank.
So could regulations, because the first thing the president said was we need more regulations. The regulations should be tighter. What is he talking about?
Well, I suspect what he's talking about is how the capital of a bank is invested. So like I said, you know, it is kind of complicated. But so if a bank has $1 billion of deposits and they lend out $850 million of it, they have $150 million left of deposit cash.
And these are other people's money.
It's other people's money. So every time you deposit money in a bank, you're lending that bank money, and you can get it back whenever you want it according to the terms of your deposit. So if you have a certificate of deposit, you might have to wait 90 days or a year to get it back. But if you just have a checking account, you can take it out this afternoon.
Right.
And so they've got to have money on hand to meet the withdrawal requirements. And then they have to have backup money, because if there ends up being an unusual rate of withdrawals, they might have to dip into something more than this $150 million of deposit money they've held in reserve. They might have to dip into their capital account. And so if that capital account is invested in a way that is not terribly liquid, meaning it's easily converted into cash without loss, then there's a problem. And so what a number of banks clearly have been doing is investing their capital account in treasury bonds. Okay, very safe. But if the treasury bond has a 4-year maturity or 5-year maturity, so that means it's $1,000 bond. It's $1,000 bond, but you don't get the $1,000 until 5 years from now. Meanwhile, it's going to pay you 1% interest because that's what it says on the bond. Okay. But if the interest rate has gone up to 5 and you have to sell that bond to someone, they're not going to pay you $1,000 for it because they want to get 5% on their money.
Right.
So they're going to pay you $650 or whatever. And so you've lost $350 of capital. And so whereas the bank thought they had $50 million or $100 million of capital when they sell these bonds, they really only had $50 million. Now they've got to tell the public they have to go out and raise more capital and they're short on capital. And when the public hears that, the public says, gosh, maybe this bank is going to be in trouble. Maybe I need to take my money out of the bank. And so that starts the run. And that's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. That's what happens to banks when they fail, is that they have to tell the public something that causes the public to lose confidence in the bank. And what the FDIC has done this weekend should put a lot more confidence in the minds of depositors that their money is safe. They don't need to run to the bank and get their money out. So now the remaining risk is whether the investors in banks are going to worry about investing in banks, because the banks are allowed to fail under this scheme, right? So the Silicon Bank is gone and it's owned by FDIC. It's in receivership. Signature Bank in receivership. These banks basically disappear. And so now the secondary risk is, are these banks strong enough and good enough investment opportunities, or are people going to take their money out of investing and owning banks, okay? And is that going to be a problem?
So let's do this. Let's bring in Dave from San Francisco. Good morning to you, Dave. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Oh, howdy, Earl and Sandy. I'm a big fan of Prairie Home Companion. And I've always invested in ketchup. It keeps things stable. So
ketchup.
The world needs more ketchup. Yeah, I used to listen to Prairie Home Companion too. It's just ketchup. It's soothing.
Keeps things calm. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I was going to raise when I got out here in San Francisco in 1990. The economy was horrible. It was kind of a remnant of the 1986 crash, and nobody knew how to deal with things. And, so much of the world's economy was really trapped by old boy bad economics, and whether or not that bad economics was going to be, the standard for where we go in the future. And luckily enough, there were some intelligent investors that were talking about socially conscious investing. I think there was Working Assets was a mutual fund. There were a number of different mutual funds that got created based upon investing in non-polluting companies, in biodegradable products as opposed to, plastics that are going to be around for 300 years, things like that. And so the stability of those companies helped change the economy in a total way. And a lot of Silicon Valley is very interested in recycling and a number of socially conscious different things. And I would expect that Silicon Valley Bank was as well. And the option of the Biden administration is now going to be whether they want socially conscious people to invest in the new bank or allow these fly-by-nighters and polluters to basically manage banks again.
I don't know. I don't see that as the outcome from this. I mean, Silicon Valley Bank was investing in startups. Silicon Valley is an area that is undoubtedly filled with people who have a view like you described. But I'm not sure that the failure of that bank. First of all, the government isn't going to be who establishes the next bank to fill the shoes of what Silicon Valley is doing. That's going to be the banking marketplace. I think banks and the financial community generally has been ahead of the game in terms of being interested in worrying about renewables and the carbon issues, et cetera, because when they put their money someplace. They want to make sure that it isn't at risk for any kind of reason. And so, for instance, it was the financial community that was telling utilities not to build coal plants. That was the ultimately most decisive message that the utility industry got when Wall Street said, hey, we don't like the idea of you building coal plants because those aren't going to have a long shelf life. Because they're gonna go the way of limitations on carbon, and so I don't.
Well, what you're talking about is within the last 30 years where the banks made that decision, and that's sort of what I'm talking about. It's taken decades for old money used to invest in it. The only thing I would agree, not the only thing, but I would agree with you in previous to 1990 was the investments in nuclear power. There has never been an insurance policy, a private insurance policy on a nuclear power plant, because they've always seen it as the most horrible risk. It could top out with these tort reform laws at $250 million, when you could have a lifetime of cancer clusters.
Hey, David, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Let's go to David from MEC1. Hey, good morning, David. How you doing? Thank you for the call.
Hey, good morning. So I'm just going to keep you guys abreast of what's going on this morning. So it is snowballing. There were three additional banks this morning that were halted trading. It was First Republic Bank, Western Alliance, and now PacWest.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is, and you were talking about it briefly with the bonds and what have you. So you're correct. The inflation is killed the bond market for when these banks purchased these bonds when they were low. And what's happening is, from what I understand, is that it's a $650 billion time bomb. So because of this, Silicon.
Well, Dave, one thing though.
This is not just Silicon Bank.
Yeah, but one other. No, I know. One other announcement that was made over the weekend was that the Federal Reserve plans on lending money to the banks that are holding these hold to maturity Treasury instruments, and lending them at face value, so that instead of the bank having to incur the loss by selling the bond and thereby fortifying their capital account, they're going to allow the bank to borrow that money at face value. So that might promise to squelch some of this problem. But First Republic was being talked about yesterday as being a bank that might go, so I'm interested. I think there is a worry, like I said, of the investor worry about staying invested in banks. And what you're saying is confirming that they've stopped trading in the stock of three banks, you said.
So this basically from the New York Times, since the collapse on Friday, many have claimed that the collapse was a longer term result of a bill Trump signed into law in 2018 that cut regulations for mid-level and regional banks like Silicon Valley. The bill allowed banks with assets of over $250 billion to avoid mandatory oversight from the Federal Reserve that kept a check on their stability, up from the previous limit of $50 billion in assets, which was set in the wake of the Great Recession. The changes were lobbied for by many in the financial sector, including SVB CEO Greg Becker.
Yeah, and what they got out of was something called stress testing, where the banks were required to make assumptions about events in the economy and then see how their bank could withstand it with their capital.
Which then goes back to why Joe Biden is saying that there were people who created this kind of situation and that they would be held accountable.
Yeah, Dave, I'm sorry, I did interrupt you, though. Was there more to report about the developments this morning?
Well, so what's happened is that they're now looking into, I think there's some panic selling going on because of what happened over the weekend. And I'm still waiting to get some, they're going to update some more information. But it's also now hitting the major U.S. banks where they're dropping about anywhere from 10% to 7.5% stock value. But that being the case, I do think that people have to realize that the bigger thing is, and I was reading over the weekend, you know, you have to realize that one of the reasons why the stock market has not gone up as much as it should be is now that the U.S. Treasury yields are outdoing dividend stocks now.
Well, listen, they,
32 yeah. stocks.
We got to go to a break. We got to go to a break. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, it's just one more thing that you stack on to many other things that are happening right now that, you know, point to some kind of unstable kind of environment that our nation is in and facing. And what is the most, I guess, frightening part of it is we don't understand these things, right? I mean, we don't understand how those things work and how that will impact mom and pop, which are the majority of us. These things are over our heads.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like you live in a world, it's like Mother Nature, you know. It's beyond control, it seems like. It's something that happens to us, and it's not something over which we can exert a lot of control. And that is one of the problems with the economy. When you speak about the economy generally, you are speaking about something that's almost like Mother Nature. It's a power unto itself. You can take it apart, and you can understand its pieces, and you can understand how it is that we could affect the economy and cause it to operate better. And part of that is economic and financial regulation. And, you know, that's been the bellwether. That's been the hallmark of the U.S. in terms of being the world currency, being a stable place, being the most stable economy in the world. That doesn't mean we're totally stable, but we have been the most stable. But we put that at risk when we get rid of the regulation that might have been creating the stability. And I think that it's interesting the New York Times brought that up, because I was surprised that banks were allowed by the Federal Reserve to invest their capital in long maturity in 5 or 10 year treasury bonds, because the fact is those are speculative. Those can rise and fall in value. If you have to sell a 10-year bond next year and interest rates have gone up a lot, you'll lose a lot of money. So the banks and what these were called were hold to maturity. So yeah, if you hold it for out to the end, you get $1,000 back. So you don't lose that money. But if you have to sell it before the maturity date, you can lose quite a bit of money.
But so see, that's why it shows how fragile the average citizen's lives can be in the society, because we don't understand that part of it. That part of it is above what it is we are dealing with. Well, we are dealing with putting our money in a bank and thinking that the money is going to be there because it's safe, and, well, and we want to be able to go back and get it, because many of us are living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And we don't have these, you know, long-term accounts. But yet, when you find out, as I was reading that, and it said Donald Trump created that, he the regulations, he knew what the outcome of that could be.
Well, the bank,
but there's risk.
Well, you know, the Federal Reserve changed the regulations, and when you change, you know, those regulations were created in 2008 as a response to what surprised the public, which was that the system was so fragile and banks were operating without the degree of conservatism that they ought to be operating in order to protect the safety of the banking system and the bank itself, that each bank. And so it's clear that if you don't regulate people they will exert more risky behavior than they should for the system at large. It's like I've equated it to a team that has home run hitters. You know, if you pay people by the home run, they're going to swing for the fences and strike out a lot.
But Sandy, here it is, 15 years later.
Yeah.
After that major crisis.
Yeah.
And yet, it people didn't learn from that.
Well, we didn't. I mean, the fact is that our memories expire as to why we did things. The Glass-Steagall Act was there to make banks much safer, to keep them from investing in risky things beyond loans to individuals and corporations. And that was rescinded in the 90s, and that was undoubtedly one of the causes of the 2008 collapse, because the banks were all invested in many things other than loans that were risky. Now we've got a 15-year memory lapse. You know, we drop the regulations, and we find out that those regulations really were a good idea. So, you know, I think that, again, I get back to regulations generally. You know, the FAA, I think the airline industry and Boeing learned a lesson when the FAA got too cozy with Boeing and let them regulate themselves on the safety of their new aircraft.
Yeah, but Sandy, these people are gambling with the lives of the American people.
Well, the banks, you mean?
Yeah, I mean just the people who clearly, 15 years later.
Yeah.
And all the people and all the average American people who suffered through that and struggled to try to fight back, to realize that there are people who are still gambling with that.
Well, let me just so that we don't participate in creating any concern on the part of listeners, what the FDIC did this weekend makes everybody's money safe in the bank, okay? Nobody's not going to get their money out of the bank. So that bank failures, to the extent they might occur, are not going to occur because people can't get their money out of the bank. What's happening now is on the stock market, people are thinking that banks might not be as good a place to invest their money in owning the banks. Okay, so the people who own banks are thinking, you know what, I have this stock in JP Morgan Chase, and I'm not sure it's worth as much as I paid for it. I'm going to sell it because the banking industry looks a
right.
little more fragile than I thought it was, in terms of now I'm looking in the inside of it and seeing that, gee, maybe they're not as smart a place as I thought. The fact that bank stock goes down in value, so long as those banks stay in operation, will not have an impact on Tom, Dick, and Mary.
So, Sandy, I don't mean that it's going to have an impact on Tom, Dick, and Mary from that perspective. It will from the perspective of now the stock market starts to take a dive, and that then impacts
yes.
the economy.
Yes.
And Tom, Dick, and Mary wind up suffering from that.
If the stock market takes a dive as the result of bank stocks
suffering. Which it can certainly happen,
it
right?
It could happen. Yeah, I mean, the fact is that the stock market and the economy generally have sort of been looking for a reason.
Right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So that's, you know...